This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Gill, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception, Perception, the show. I just want to let the listeners know, voice quality, probably not at an all-time high today. I'm running a little ragged here, playing a little hurt, but that's okay. We're going to get through today's show. It's all good. And Matt, we got a lot of news, both in reception, in the world of Reception, Perception, and in the world of the NFL. But let's go ahead and get the listeners all caught up on what's going on the RP side.
I was going to say, voice quality, maybe not so high, but the website quality,
yeah, boy,
up. The quality,
yeah,
is
boy,
high for the website. I will say that I have had very little to do with the actual redesign of the website. So I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, as anybody this morning, going to the website to look up something of, you know, some Reception Perception chart to tweet it out when you know, somebody signed this morning or whatever, and I'm like, oh boy, the site is ready. So we've been talking about it a little bit on the show, the site redesign and kind of the facelift we were going to give receptionperception.com, and man, James, I think you guys have put together something really killer. I think you and Zach and Todd and everybody that was working on this, it looks awesome, man. So I know that we took a lot of user feedback over the course of the last few months about navigation and how easy it is to find things, which the reason I'm not so involved in this type of stuff is because, like, I know the website. I was around when it got, you know, put together, so I know how to find things. But just my first impressions is definitely going to be a lot easier for all the other people to find things on the site.
Right. We wanted to definitely hyper-focus in on the mobile side too. You know, we saw that the vast majority of our users, this is a surprise to me, actually, you know, engage with the website via mobile. And it wasn't really designed, I think, for mobile at first. You know, much more of a desktop experience, our Reception Perception version 1. But now version 2.0, much more geared towards the mobile side. And I think, and again, we're hammering out some small details here and there. But anyways, it should be a lot easier to navigate, a lot easier to kind of scroll through and find what you're going to find. Anyways, okay, neither here nor there. By the way, go check out the website, receptionperception.com. There you go.
Yeah, baby, go check it out and subscribe. And I think one thing we're gonna focus on too more, you know, we're going to talk about DJ more later in the show, but we have, we're going to put some more free content up for people to sort of get a taste of Reception Perception right now.
It's
because DJ
taste.
Moore, He's pretty buzzy.
Wet the beak, as they say. Wet the beak a little bit. DJ Moore, free profile on the website right now. We're going to get to him. We're definitely going to talk Raiders today. But listen, man, it's Wednesday sit here, Wednesday, March 15th, and the entire football world came to an absolute standstill because Aaron Rodgers went on Pat McAfee and kind of laid out everything that's been going on with him. By the way, this is the power of Aaron Rodgers. I mean, we are literally kicking off free agency today. I mean, I know that a lot of deals had been negotiated up until this point.
Right.
But free agency officially began today. That's why we wanted to do the site redesign today, kind of launch it with free agency. But no one cared, Matt, about free agency at all. No, like, literally no one. The entire football community was on Twitter and reacting to and hanging off of every little word that Aaron Rodgers said. That's the power of Aaron Rodgers, man. That's pretty cool.
I think Pat McAfee had something like 500,000 concurrent viewers, you know,
crazy
on YouTube when Aaron Rodgers was on there. So shout out to Pat and the boys and Aaron Rodgers and AJ Hawk for putting that together. And it was definitely, you know, I mean, it was to be expected. Everybody's been waiting for this Aaron Rodgers domino to fall. And technically, James, as we're sitting here on Wednesday
not done
at 3
yet.
p.m. Pacific, it's actually not done yet.
Not done yet.
And part of, I think, what Rodgers wanted to do was to go on to McAfee and really settle the score. Like he said, he's like, I'm not making any announcement or any decision today. Like the decision has been made. I made the decision last Friday and made it clear that I was going to intend to play, and I intend to play for the New York Jets, which to me means, just like Trey Wingo tweeted, what was that, Monday or whatever, basically what he said was like, the deal is done. Like it is done. He is going, and Rodgers had made it clear since Friday, like this is what was going to happen. I think he felt that after he went into the darkness, that something had changed. Something had changed on the Packers side when he came out, and they were just clearly ready to move on and ready for him to make a decision. I think they probably, in an ideal world, probably wanted him to retire, and it would just be an easy transition. But Rodgers isn't ready to retire, I guess, which, I mean, he sounded like he was probably ready to retire when he was going to go into the whole darkness thing. And then coming out of it, he's like, I think he's got another chip on his shoulder, and he's fueled by spite again. So he wants to go play for the Jets. And basically what we're waiting for right now is for the Jets and the Packers to agree to compensation. So Rodgers really today was all about, I'm letting you all know that despite like the media thing about, oh, look, he's holding this up. He's holding these two teams hostage. He's saying, no, I'm not. I've made the decision. These people just need to figure out the trade. So that's really where we stand right now. It is going to happen. It just has not officially happened yet.
First of all, good for him, right? Because everyone's going online saying, oh, Rodgers, drama queen. He's doing all these things. And he basically set the record straight. He's like, no, that is exactly not what is happening. And basically it's the two teams, that are trying to, I'm sure basically what it sounded like is, I'd love to tell people that I'm going to the Jets, but the deal's not done yet, you know?
Yeah.
And for everyone saying I'm creating all this drama and doing all these things, not the case. The two teams need to work out a trade. And as we said, it's not officially done even now, but I think at this point, everyone was so tired of hearing of the Aaron Rodgers rumors that Aaron Rodgers got out in front of it and tried to address it. Can I just say this though? I set out a series of tweets here. This I think would be a great drinking game. Aaron Rodgers or Game of Thrones, and you just read off some of the things that he says, right? I mean, if you just go in and just say, when I came out of the darkness, something changed. I mean, is that Game of Thrones or is that Aaron Rodgers? I don't know.
It sounds like Bane from, you know, the Dark Knight Returns or whatever.
That's the only voice I got. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, that sounds like a Bane quote. But no, it like, I think sure. I think that's a great point. And Rodgers clearly he's got a bit of a flair for the dramatic. He's got a flair for the spite, which, I mean, Game of Thrones is basically an entire show about
100%.
Spiteful folks trying to ice each other out and climb on top of each other. And I know it's exhausting and I know it's tiring, and Rodgers doesn't necessarily, I'm not sitting here saying like, you guys need to give Rodgers the benefit of the doubt when it comes to creating drama or needless media speculation. I'm just saying that that's clearly what's holding this up is the Jets and Packers actually agreeing to a trade. And it is complicated, right? Because what's always tough is when you're only one team. There's only one team in the mix for Aaron Rodgers, and it's the New York Jets, and he's trying to get his buddies signed there, and we know the whole deal there. That's part of it. You know, you go in there because Hackett's there, and he loves Hackett, and they have a great relationship and all that stuff.
Right.
But there's only one team, so what can the Packers realistically demand? What do the Jets realistically want to give up for a 39-year-old quarterback who – again, I think was like 90% sure he was going to retire when he went into the darkness. How long are you getting Aaron Rodgers for? Is this just a 1-year push? I don't know. It's a complicated deal, and I understand why that part of the process has been held up at this point.
I'll say this. I don't buy for one second that he was 90% committed to retiring before entering the darkness. I don't buy that for one second. I mean, why are you even it doesn't make sense. It doesn't line up. And like, you know, I'm sure from a narrative standpoint, I'm sure it sounds great in his mind.
It sounds better. Yeah.
It does sound way better, you know? Like, oh, I'm coming back now because I'm John Wick and I've, you know, there's vengeance on my brain. And no, it doesn't. None of that makes any sense whatsoever. That being said, to your point, though, I've seen this take online, which is very odd, that the Packers have all the leverage because they can just continue to hold out and the Jets need to make something happen. And I'm like, guys, it's March.
Right.
Why? There's the Packers have no leverage. They're going to hold on to him till what, August? And then training camp starts. He shows up. You really, that's a good move for the Packers? No,
yeah.
That's not good. That's a terrible move. Like, they have to move him in that July timeframe. Now the Jets could be getting impatient, but with the no trade clause and all those things, we already know, again, as you mentioned, there's only one team in play and that's the Jets. The Jets, in my opinion, should have no motivation whatsoever to cave into any demands the Packers have. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Both sides, I think, are incentivized to get this thing done to a point that we're not sitting there. Even I would say, like, and by the way, like, the Packers want a draft pick. They want to be able to make a pick at the draft. Like, that's, I think, probably the deadline. Like, I think hopefully it gets done here in, like, hopefully, the next week or so. That would be great.
I think so too,
because you don't want a situation again where the Jets can't talk about him until he's officially a member of their team. That would seem silly to me, but yeah, the biggest thing is here, like, they want to get a draft pick. They want to get that thing there, but it's just tough. Like, I don't think they can, and I don't think they are, like, asking for two first round picks or some albatross package or something like that. The Packers, that is, because they don't have that kind of leverage either. They want him gone at this point and everybody needs to move on.
Yeah, I think that is some of the reports, though, that they're asking for a player and two first-round picks back. And that player, a lot of people are speculating, might be Eli Moore. By the way, so I just kind of wanted to dig into this. It sounds like it's very close. Oh, by the way, let me share one more quote that is very Game of Thrones-ish. And again, I just think it would be a great drinking game. There is a sanctuary of solace around my house, giving conversations their proper privacy. Like, if that is not a quote from the Game of Thrones, I don't know what is. Like, that is, come on now.
Doesn't even sound like, by the way, that doesn't sound like Game of Thrones, the television show. That sounds like Game of Thrones, the book. Like, that's how crazy that is. He had another,
sanctuary,
like,
solace. I love it.
He had, like, another, absolutely, like, ridiculous line too about you know, when they were saying about the whole list of demands and all that stuff.
And
he had some sort of, like, I can't remember it now and I can't find a tweet about it, but, like, some ridiculous line about how he's like, he doesn't have them in some chamber, you know, or whatever. Like, so yeah, your drinking game is good, James. You got some legs with this. You need to find like a game maker who's, you can do like cards or whatever and you flip them over. If you get it wrong, you drink. I mean, that you could have people getting into a pretty tough situation there from a boozed up perspective with this game.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
Listen, the Rodgers saga almost done, okay? But I'm more focused in on the Jets now. And I guess to a lesser degree, the Packers. But the Packers, I don't think really have too many folks that are very interesting from a pass catching perspective. But okay. But Garrett Wilson looks great. And now they add Alan Lazard into the mix. Maybe potentially Eli Moore. I would love for them to keep Elijah Moore there as well. I don't know. What is the contract situation for Corey Davis? I have no idea. Is Lazard the Corey Davis replacement? Is that what we're working with here?
Essentially. And yeah, let's kind of talk about the Lazard thing, because obviously Diana Rossini was the one who reported it, and Rogers sort of refuted it, although didn't refute it. He just refuted like the word list of demands or whatever, which she didn't use. It was just like other people on the internet aggregated it and stuff like that. And you know, the four players that were on there, three Packers, Mercedes Lewis, Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard, and Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham obviously is the one interesting one.
Yeah.
That part of it I think is a little eye rolling for a lot of people with Rodgers, but specifically on Lazard, the one guy who got done here at this point, I agree. He's basically just a Corey Davis replacement. And for me, I tweeted about this. I literally think actually Corey Davis and Alan Lazard are almost basically the same player from a skill set standpoint, from the way they win on the field. I know Corey Davis is like a former top five pick a billion years ago, and Alan Lazard is an undrafted free agent, but take that out of it. Like, what they do on the field and what they bring to a team is very similar. So if Alan Lazard equals Corey Davis, but Alan Lazard equals getting Aaron Rodgers, or helping, you know, bring Aaron Rodgers along and make him comfortable, then Alan Lazard is greater than Corey Davis. If my math holds up there, basically. If my SAT score math holds up there. But basically, what Alan Lazard is, he's not a separator. Like, his reception perception chart would show that to you. He's, you know, there's a lot of red there. He does not get open down the field. He's not a guy who wins really on anything other than like flat routes and slant routes. But neither is Corey Davis. Corey Davis has never been a separator either. You know, you look at his, I shared this with the Jets fan, his 2020 chart from his best season in Tennessee, Corey Davis. A lot of red there. Not a guy who is going to get a lot of separation against man or zone coverage. But what both of these guys bring is they're pretty good contested catch receivers. They bring a lot of size to the table. And they are great blockers. Corey Davis is a great blocking receiver. Alan Lazard, he brings a lot more positional flexibility too, because the Packers, and of course, like, not only do they have Rodgers there in New York now potentially, but there's, you know, Nathaniel Hackett is there. He comes from this system.
Right.
They used Alan Lazard as like a big move tight end at different points. Like, he might be more tight end than like some of the tight ends, and I refuse to chart for reception perception, by the way. Just so like they really make use of him as a blocker. And I know that nobody has enjoyed this recent like pivot for me into wide receiver blocking trutherism. I tweet about, you know, Alan Lazard as a blocker. Nobody gives a shit, but it really does matter. Okay. And like a guy like Elijah Moore, not going to block. Garrett Wilson, he's too good to be out there like wham blocking on lead plays. And both these guys are small. So I actually think Lazard, you take the Rodgers dramatic stuff out of it, it actually makes a lot of sense from an on-field perspective. It's just basically a one-to-one swap of what Corey Davis brought to this team, because he's probably going to get cut. They can move on from him and save $10 million against the cap. He's basically just going to play that role, and I actually think it's a really good fit, despite the fact that, again, Lazard is probably like at best a number three receiver and is more of, he's going to bring you stuff in the blocking game, but this team's got a great running back and wants to run the ball there with Breece Hall.
Yeah, and I think that's the identity of their coaching staff as well. We'll see how much they let Aaron Rodgers kind of freewheel and do his thing on the offensive side of the football, which I think Robert Saleh would be pretty smart to let him go ahead and go do that. You know, just look, Rob, Aaron,
that's
just
why you
go
have
do
Hackett
your thing.
Too. It's
yeah, exactly.
That's why Hackett's, you have Hackett and not he's, Matt he's, LaFleur,
he's a,
right? Or Mike
exactly.
LaFleur.
He's a nothing. Yeah, he's a nothing. Like he's an absolute nothing. Like, forget it. We saw that in Denver. He's a non-factor. That's fine. Just let Aaron Rodgers cook and let him do his thing. It's all good. Okay. But talk to me about the upside now for somebody like Garrett Wilson. And if I'm crossing my fingers here, if Eli Moore stays with the Jets as well, can you talk about the potential fit there?
Yeah. Let's talk first about Garrett Wilson. Cause I mean, Garrett Wilson is a guy that I'm in the middle of finishing his reception perception sample right now. As I've said on the podcast, and as we'll talk about with DJ Moore later on, talked about Chris Olave, I think on the last episode, when these guys get big quarterback upgrades or they get traded, they're instantly going on the site. That's a new feature this year. That's a new thing this year, so that I'm not having a chart like Mecole Hardman and Darius Slayton, because nobody really wants that. You want to know about Garrett Wilson and how he might fit with with Aaron Rodgers. But I mean, Garrett Wilson, dude, he's just such a good player. I'm such a fan of his game. I was a fan of his game as a collegiate player. We know he was one of the best success rate versus zone coverage players among the guys that came into the draft last year. But really, I think what Garrett Wilson showed in his first season in the NFL, another guy that was a little bit position versatile. Remember, there were times where he played as a flanker. There were times he played as like a more of the slot receiver early in the year. And then, you know, by the end of the year, he was kind of that number one X receiver on the outside. But this is a player who can win at all three levels. He's a guy that is actually not that disciplined and refined as a route runner.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He's just I shouldn't say he's not disciplined or he's not some of the like little technical nuances with him aren't all the way tightened up. Like a Justin Jefferson coming into the NFL, who is just, or right. A Chris Olave, again, his teammates, a great comparison. Like Olave is, his fundamentals are tight. Like he's got everything down to a T, but Wilson still separates at an incredibly high level. You know, for the rookie report exclusively, he was number one in success rate versus man and press because he's really a freak show. He's so athletic. I mean, he is absolutely unbelievable in that regard. And again, he's not a bad technician or a bad route runner. That's not what I'm saying right at all. He's actually a very, very good route runner. I'm just talking about from the fundamental perspectives. He can, that's actually almost encouraging, is that if he gets those fundamentals tightened up, if him and Rodgers get that sort of mind meld going, like he's going to be an unbelievable player.
Oh boy.
I've said this a lot about him. He is also, in addition to, because I think Elijah Moore, who we're talking about in a second, is also a great route runner, but and also a really good separation player. But Garrett Wilson is not just a great separation player. He's also someone that they trusted to throw into tight coverage. Wasn't always great at it, but they did trust him there. But most importantly, he's fantastic after the catch. Like these quick hitting concepts that are pretty much were already installed last year with Mike LaFleur. And it's going to be a pretty easy transition with Nathaniel Hackett, because it all comes off the same tree there. Those plays with him are incredible. Like Garrett Wilson rarely ever goes down on first contact. I've made the joke a lot that he is what all the Tony bros love about Kadarius Tony from an after the catch perspective, but he can actually run routes. Like he really is that freaky of an athlete, Garrett Wilson. I'm very, very high on him.
Yeah. Garrett Wilson was certainly great after the catch. We saw a lot of big play highlights from the former Ohio State Buckeye, who ran a 4.38 40. To give you a little idea of his overall straight line speed, but obviously his horizontal movement too, I thought was really good. But after the catch, looked really, really great. Okay, let's dive into Eli Moore. To me, I thought this is a guy that would be great as kind of like your second piece. You know, he could play inside, he could play outside a little bit. And he's just just a high quality player. Like, is he a true 1-1? Nah, I don't think so. But what does Matt Harmon think about potentially Eli Moore staying on this team? And again, being, the Robin to Garrett Wilson's Batman.
Elijah Moore, I think from a fantasy perspective, is going to be a little bit tougher, because of the roles on this team, but we can talk about that in a second. From a talent perspective, Elijah Moore is really tough, because I think he was an awesome player as a rookie. You know, he's one of these guys that cleared that 75% success rate versus man barometer that, like, those guys all go on to become hits, basically, except Sterling Shepard, who can't stay healthy. But everybody else, it's like everyone who's cleared that bar has been a really good long-term successful NFL pro. Elijah Moore did clear that bar as a rookie, but we know his second year was just such a mess. Again, he's another guy that I'll have a profile up on him on the site by the end of the week for sure. Hopefully by the end of Thursday, as you're listening to this. So I think that he showed last year still a consistent ability to get open on the outside as an inside player as well. You know, they kind of transitioned him more into a slot receiver role the longer that the year went on, right, because they were kind of struggling to figure out what to do with Garrett Wilson, because Garrett Wilson just... Like, here's the thing about, like, Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson is, like, Elijah Moore could still be good, but he's just probably never going to be better than Garrett Wilson, who's just, again, such a freakier player, better after the catch, and still has, again, tighten up those fundamentals. He could really be a great player. I think that Elijah Moore can still be a very good player for this team. I think the question with Elijah Moore is basically, what's his role going to be on this team if he stays on this team? Because I do think there's a non-0% chance, just like you do, that maybe he could end up being part of the package that gets sent back to Green Bay to sort of beef up their receiver core along with some younger guys like Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs. And so that's a kind of a separate conversation. But if he's on this team, I think the biggest question about him from a role perspective is he going to be a slot-only player? Or is Alan Lazard going to be their big slot? And, like, who's on the field when they go to two receiver sets and they have – They've already got two good tight ends. If they bring in Mercedes Lewis, now we're talking about a lot of tight ends here, but it's like Alan Lazard going to be the flanker and Garrett Wilson's going to be the X, or is it going to be Elijah Moore outside? And when they go to 11 personnel, they move Alan Lazard closer to the line of scrimmage because they want him to be a big blocking guy. I think that's going to be the biggest question here, but I would still, sitting here right now, expect the target pecking order to go Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, Alan Lazard. What has me just like pausing on that last point is, you know, Aaron Rodgers just obviously loves Alan Lazard so much and trusts him down near the goal line. And Lazard has great hands. And even if he's not open, he could throw to him in tight windows because Rodgers is that guy. So I think Elijah Moore is definitely the biggest wild card in this group here, but he's still a player that, based on reception perception and based on his separation ability, a guy that, like, I want to buy low on and bet on bouncing back at some point.
I would love to see him stay for the Jets, but if he doesn't, how ironic would that be? And what an interesting turn of events, because I felt like when he was coming out getting drafted, I was like, the Packers need to draft this guy. They had a clear need. They tried to address that. They bypassed Eli Moore. Then they went and got Amari Rodgers, thinking, we could get 70% of Moore by getting Amari Rodgers. And no, you're not, you know, it's like, come on, man. Like, what, like, watch this guy play a little bit. This is the guy that would have been an absolute perfect addition to that Green Bay Packers offense. Because at the time they would have had Davante Adams, and then you add in Elijah Moore into the mix, and who knows what happens, you know, who knows what happens there. I mean, I tell you this, I think Eli Moore probably would have been happier in Green Bay than he is in New York, because obviously he went, you know, he went off the reservation a little bit this past season. So I don't know. There is that history too, right, between the coaching staff and Elijah Moore, and I think that may play a factor into Green Bay acquiring his services, which, oh, by the way, they could have just drafted him.
Yeah.
They could have just drafted Elijah Moore.
The Packers have a lot of thresholds when it comes to, like, receivers. Is they're not going to buy into a lot of these smaller players. And Amari Rodgers is, like, a short guy. He's 5'9", but he's, like, 212, or at least he was when he came into the NFL. He was, like, a thick boy. Elijah Moore is 5'10 and was, like, sub 180 pounds. So that's probably a big reason. Not, and by the way, like, maybe they look at Amari Rodgers and be like, see? That's why we don't do the little fellas. We're going for these big receivers, and obviously looks like they've got a lot of success there with Christian Watson, even though he's got some things he needs to tighten up as well. But I do think he would make an interesting go back in that in the trade there, just because, like, the Packers have always wanted to have, like, a pre-snap mode. You know, this is a big bitching fest between Rodgers and Matt LaFleur originally was, right, can we get a snap without pre-snap motion? Although I think Elijah Moore would actually be one of a really good player in that pre-snap motion package. It would be a good fit in that system overall. But again, they're running a similar offense there in New York. It's going to be pretty similar based on what Rodgers just came from. So I think Moore can still fit. And it does sound like a lot of the problems that he had with the coaching staff last year had to do, you know, was directed at like Mike LaFleur, which apparently, you know, he apparently like told him to, you know, go F yourself or F you or something on practice one day. But, you know, Elijah Moore, I still have hope for the guy. It's just always really tough in that second season when like the team is on a 5-game win streak or whatever, and you're sounding off about wanting to get traded. Not the best career move long term for him, but that rookie season was fantastic, and I hope he I still think from an isolation perspective, like when you look at him as a separator, and when you look at the way the guys supported him too in the locker room, like when he caught a touchdown against the Bears, think they all knew what was going on with why Elijah Moore wasn't having success. But I agree. I still think he could be like a. I still think he, like, his collegiate profile and reception perception showed he could have like Antonio Brown light upside. I still think he could be like that type of player, as someone who could win and separate on the outside against man coverage, despite the smaller frame. You know, I'm not saying he's going to become Antonio Brown, but like that type of player, smaller guy who could win on the outside. But, you know, if they kind of stick him into a slot only role, it's going to be tough for him to be consistently on the field.
Hey everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
What was very curious to me was in New England, where they basically let Jacoby Myers walk, and then they turn around and then they go sign Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, I'm just confused. The price was exactly the same, a 3-year, $33 million contract for both players. And not only that, I just looked this up. Jacoby's deal is way worse. Jacoby signed essentially a 1-year deal with two team options. Only $11 million fully guaranteed for Jacoby. By the way, Jacoby Myers, please, you need to hire yourself better agents, my man. Like, everyone was saying that Jacoby's basically the best free agent wide receiver in a year where there's not a lot of great wide receivers in the draft. In a year where there's no great wide receivers available for free agency, he should have been able to score himself a pretty nice deal, you know? And instead, he signs a 3-year 33 with only $11 million fully guaranteed. They could essentially cut this guy after 1 year. That's shocking. I just want to put this in perspective. And again, you know, people say, oh, I don't care about the contracts. Well, I'm just saying, Christian Kirk, And there were comparisons, right? Because when Christian Kirk signed his free agent deal, also not a great free agent wide receiver class, right? He signed a 4-year, $72 million deal, $37 million guaranteed at signing. He got more guaranteed money than Jacoby got for the entirety of his contract. Now, again, we also clown the Jags for signing Christian Kirk to that monster deal. I get that. But somewhere in between, I thought should have been where Jacoby ended up. And man, he just didn't get that deal. My question to you, though, Matt, is why would New England swap Jacoby Myers for Juju Smith-Schuster when, in my mind, they do a lot of the same stuff and you got them at the same price?
Yeah, Juju's deal is a little bit, all of these deals, by the way, like you perfectly broke down with Jacoby Myers. It's like you see it's like, oh, 3 years for $33 million. There's just so much BS money in all of this. And it's like, I feel like more than ever, and maybe it's because the NFL, like NFL fans and, you know, I think people who cover, like, you know, takesters like us, like, deal into the contracts so much more, and maybe we're just more aware of this stuff. It does feel like more than ever, though, that insiders, like, peddle the agents' dirty work, basically, about, like, let's make sure we get out there the absolute max deal. Because Juju's deal is incentives based too. Like, he's actually, I saw Tom Pelissero point this out, that he has, he's got $16 million guaranteed, a lot of incentives that can get him to $33 million. His base value is more like $25.5 million. So he's another guy that, like, again, the same, like, there's a lot going on there with both these deals. But to answer the kind of player to player question, I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't just bring Jakobi Meyers back. Because I think Jakobi Meyers, like, yeah. There was a lot of discourse about this. I think Jakobi Meyers' film, I think his reception perception, him as a player, he's just been better than Juju the last 3 years, pretty much. Like, we all know that Juju has the, I think I talked about this on the show last week, like, he's got the fake news stats from 2018. Wide receiver stats are, in fact, fake news. But okay. Because he's been that player basically throughout the entirety of his career, he's cleared 81% success rate versus zone coverage in each of the last five seasons. He's been a guy who can beat zone coverage, but he can't beat press man. Jakobi Meyers has shown over the last 2 years that he can get open against man coverage. He can get open against press coverage. Like, I think he brings you much more upside as a potential flanker receiver, which is key for his fit in Las Vegas, as we can talk about. But I think that him and Juju, in terms of the routes that they run, the routes that they win on, like, if you just look at their charts back to back on receptionperception.com, I tweeted this out too, it's pretty similar stuff. Like, it's a lot of slants, it's curls, it's dig routes. I think Jakobi gives you a little bit more pop in the intermediate game. He can run a deep post, a deep crosser, a little bit more than Juju can. I think he's a better route runner against man coverage. That's just period. I think the RP scores really back that up. Meyers has been over 70% success rate versus man in two of the last three seasons. But if I can get back to wide receiver blocking trutherism, Jakobi, not much of a blocker. Juju, definitely a little bit more physical. He kind of brings you more size, like more pop as a bigger guy at that slot position. So I think that might be part of the equation for a team with Bill Belichick that wants to be a little bit more physical and wants to run the ball. But overall, my general answer to this, why do they feel the need to swap out Jakobi Meyers for Juju? I don't know. I'm not sure on that one.
Matt, this just lines up too well, because it's New England. And New England is the absolute bottom of the barrel, worst team in the NFL when it comes to evaluating wide receivers. They are the literal bizarro world Matt Harmon of the NFL.
The best guy that they've acquired the last like 5 years is probably Jakobi Meyers.
And they fell ass backwards into it.
It was an undrafted free agent. They swung and missed when they brought Kendrick Bourne. Although I don't think Kendrick Bourne's like a useful player, and I think they've gotten pissed at him. But
how about Nelson Aguilar?
Nelson Aguilar. I mean,
how shocking was that signing? Like, Philadelphia couldn't get this guy out of there fast enough, and New England's signing him to big money. You're like, what are you guys
doing?
Are you guys doing?
It's like the most unpatriots thing ever to have. Like, Nelson Aguilar has this kind of surprise bounce back campaign.
With the Raiders.
And
right,
it's like,
right.
Oh, wow. Like, on the cheap, great stuff. And then New England pays top dollar for the outlier year. Usually they're the other way around, like kind of scooping in guys. But wide receiver has always been a trouble spot for this team. Definitely in the draft, but lately in the pro personnel evaluations too. I mean, the Devontae Parker thing, like Miami's willing to trade him in the division because he can't get open. And like, all the Patriots need is a guy who can get open, and they get the guy who cannot get open as a big X receiver on the outside in Parker, and also can't stay healthy. And predictably, both of those things were true last year. Couldn't get open and can't stay healthy. And then Tyquan Thornton, they take in the second round. They've got all of these great
receivers.
Wow. In the draft last year, and it's like, we need speed. Let's get the guy who is literally only speed, Tyquan Thornton. I mean, somebody asked that to me today. Is like, oh, so clearly they don't, like, Bill Belichick does not subscribe to reception perception. I'm like, that has been, I think, pretty clear for a while.
As you mentioned, Jacoby Myers, better on deeper routes as well, better against man coverage, especially. And I think that's the big point that you hammered home in your profiles of both of these guys. Success against man coverage, Jacoby Myers at 70.6%. Now that's, you know, again, that's slightly above average. It's pretty good. You have him ranked there at 63rd percentile. And again, I think when I look at like these baseline figures, if you're new to reception perception, I always look for that 70% marker. And that to me is basically that baseline of like, all right, can he play against man coverage? That generally the answer is yes. If you clear 70%, Juju Smith-Schuster, on the other hand, 54.7% success rate versus man. You've got him graded down there as the 8th percentile against man coverage. That's not very good. And then when you take a look at over the top, the 9 route, I get it. He doesn't run a lot of nines, but 26.7% success rate on the 9 route, that's not good. Now, Jacoby Myers, 53.8% success rate on the 9 route, also slightly below average or below average, but again, you're getting a little bit extra there, just a little bit with Jacoby Myers over Juju Smith-Schuster. So I'm very confused by it. You could have had a cheaper version of Juju by just re-signing Jacoby, who, oh, by the way, knows the offense, knows the personnel, knows the players. They've built a good chemistry, right, with Mac Jones and all that. It's just baffling to me. I didn't understand it at all. Okay, but let's focus on the Raiders side of things there. Okay, so now Jacoby now joins up with Jimmy G. They trade away Darren Waller. But I think the biggest question for me, obviously they've got Devontae on the outside as your dominant X receiver. But I guess my question is, why sign Jacoby when you've got a guy in Hunter Renfrow who, in my opinion, I think they do similar things as well?
I think the big thing for this is pretty much what we just said earlier, which is that, like, I think that you can get away with Jacoby Myers being your flanker receiver. Maybe not even get away with. Like, I think he's a perfect Z receiver. And, you know, I talk about this stuff on the on the show all the time, and it's important, these pre-snap designations, especially when you're starting to talk about reception perception data. For these guys like Devontae Adams, who is a pure X receiver, like the definition of a classic X receiver, he's going to line up tethered to the line of scrimmage. You know, he is going to be on the ISO side there. He's going to see a lot more press man coverage. You want your flanker receiver who's going to be on the tight end side. He can move around pre-snap. You want him to be more of a zone beater, but you also can't have him necessarily be like hapless against man coverage. I think that's like some of these guys have really have struggled to be full-time flankers if they absolutely can't beat and struggle to stay on the field. Like what we just talked about in two wide receiver sets, you're going to lose something there if your flanker can't beat man coverage as well. Cause there are still times when you're going to go to, you know, 11 personnel or something like that. And if he's still your full-time flanker, you're going to get on third down, you're going to get a lot of man coverage, more man coverage on third down than on early down. So a lot of intricacies there, but I think basically that's the difference between a flanker and an X receiver. I think Jacoby Myers, because he's at that 70%+ success rate versus man coverage number, I feel pretty good about him as a flanker receiver. Hunter Renfrow, on the other hand, you know, he's not terrible against man coverage, not like Juju level, but he's 63.7% success rate versus man coverage in his 2021 profile. That was like 31st percentile at the time. He's definitely much more of like a slot only player, I think, than Jacoby Myers is. And again, the route charts are pretty similar for Hunter Renfrow and Jacoby Myers. There's going to be a lot of digs, a lot of slants, but Myers is just a little bit better on those routes, and he brings more size to the equation.
True.
Which, by the way, we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. Slants, digs, crossers, that's the Jimmy Garoppolo bread and MF and butter, you know, right there for Jacoby Myers, Hunter Renfrow. And of course, you know, for Devontae Adams is great on those routes too. It's going to be great with Jimmy Garoppolo there. But yeah, I think that's kind of the difference between these two guys, is I think Jacoby is more of like a flanker slot hybrid, whereas I think Renfrow is probably a slot only player. And Jacoby's just a good player, man. I really have been a fan of Jacoby Myers the last 3 years, charting him for reception perception. I think that ability to beat press man while also being a high end zone coverage beater, those are really good players you want to bet on. Yep. I'm kind of, especially now that Darren Waller's out of the mix and they're probably going to just play a ton of 11 personnel with these three guys, they'll probably draft like a more traditional Y tight end. I'm really excited about that base offense for the Raiders this year and for Jakobi Meyers, who's still going to get some slot routes as well. But this is just a reminder, by the way, like when we're talking about Hunter Renfrow being like a 31st percentile success rate versus man coverage player, everybody that says, like, you know, after seeing a bunch of highlights of like Renfrow turning people around on option routes, like, oh, Hunter Renfrow, one of the best route runners in the league, is an idiot. Okay. Because they don't actually watch tape. Okay. They watch like highlight reels. Give me a break. Like, you don't sign Jakobi Meyers to probably play as your flanker receiver over Hunter Renfrow. If Renfrow is like one of the best route runners in the league, he's a little white slot receiver who's a good player in the little white slot receiver role, but he's not one of the best route runners in the league. That just typically like sticks in my craw a little bit. The slot receiver that gets overrated because he like turns people around in zone coverage on an option route and maybe does it a couple times in the red zone. Like, watch some film for once, please.
Basically, what you're saying is anecdotally, you're it's fine, but don't buy the anecdotes. You got to buy the entire story, right? And the entire story for Hunter Renfrow is that he is a slightly incomplete player, at least from an outside perspective. Although I will say, I thought he was extremely productive in that 2021 season when he did play in that role. Obviously, completely different offense than they installed there in 2022. But to me, it goes back to Hunter Renfrow only started one game last year. Mac Hollins, ladies and gentlemen, was playing routinely over Hunter Renfrow. I think, in my personal opinion, and I've got nothing to base this on, but I just think the coaching staff doesn't know what the hell to do with Hunter Renfrow. I think they've got no idea what to do. They don't know how to incorporate him into an offense. And I think, to me, that says a lot about the coaching staff. It doesn't say a lot about me about Hunter Renfrow. I think what that tells me is that Josh McDaniels and the offensive coaches there, they've got to do a little soul searching. They've got to do a little homework, and they've got to figure things out. Because if you cannot figure out a way to get Hunter Renfrow on the field over Mac Hollins. That's a you problem.
Slowest receiver in the league. I think he's probably the slowest receiver in the league.
And he was playing something like 95 to 97% of the snaps. I'm telling you, that is a big time you problem. That's a Josh McDaniels problem. That is not a Hunter Renfrow problem. That's not a scheme problem. That's a you have to figure that out problem. You know what I'm saying? And to me, they go and sign Jakobi Meyers. And obviously, there's some history there with McDaniels and Meyers. And I understand that. But, you know, this idea that they're going to go to a lot of 11 personnel and figure out a way to get Hunter Renfrow involved, I'm not 100% sold on that, Matt, because they had that opportunity last year and they didn't do it. So I just think this team doesn't know, and this coaching staff has no idea how to incorporate Hunter Renfrow, run a successful, you know, operation, which doesn't make any sense. I mean, McDaniels had Edelman for all those years. Why can't Renfrow, I don't know.
It's weird.
It's oil and water, and something's not mixing there, man.
I'm not here to like say let's give Josh McDaniels the benefit of the doubt, because you know I'm definitely not going to be like the Josh McDaniels guy here. But there does seem to be some disconnect between ownership and like the play. They just shipped off Darren Waller for the 100th overall pick, a third round pick, the Kadarius Toney pick, the comp pick they got from the Chiefs when they traded the Giants traded him to Kansas City.
Right.
And they just gave Darren Waller an extension last year. And then they couldn't. There was always some weirdness between Darren Waller. Like, he was potentially available at the trade deadline. I know he's pissed at Josh McDaniels for leaking his wedding give me a break. Like, there's been some weirdness there. But like, I think Waller and Renfrow were such like classic Raiders players, like Raiders success stories. By the way, look, John Gruden, some questionable emails. We know that questionable character potentially. John Gruden was a good coach, like good offensive coach. People give John Gruden a lot of crap for I'm sending it back to 1993 or whatever, 1996, whatever he said when he got hired by the Raiders. But he did put players in good positions and got a lot out of guys like Darren Waller, who was a converted wide receiver that, you know, almost had his career slip out of his hands because of off-field issues. Hunter Renfrow, who was like a day three draft pick. But, you know, I think not to come back to wide receiver blocking trutherism again, you know, Renfro's so small and Mac Hollins, he's slow because he's huge and he's a special teamer. Maybe they thought like, all right, we want to have Mac Hollins on the field over Hunter Renfro because we're going to run the ball with Josh Jacobs a lot. Josh Jacobs, by the way, a guy they didn't give the fifth year option thing to. So I don't know. Not a lot is totally making sense for the Raiders, but I do like a three wide receiver set of Davante Adams at edge receiver, Jacoby Myers at Z, Hunter Renfro in the slot. You got Josh Jacobs in the backfield, who's a stud. You got a pretty decent offensive line. And Jimmy G, I know the first thing that people say is like, did they even really upgrade over Derek Carr? Well,
They did not.
Probably not. But Jimmy has been an efficient player. He knows Josh McDaniels, and they got him for cheaper than they would have had for Derek Carr or the Saints. That's the big thing. And I think they still have flexibility to basically, I think the Raiders left themselves, they're not banged by like, all right, if we don't get a quarterback in the draft, like we're having to start, you know, Baker Mayfield or Carson Wentz or something. Like we can have a guy at quarterback, but they could still potentially take a guy in the draft. But I don't know. I've gotten around to like how good I totally feel about the Raiders offense, but I do like this receiver core off the top of my dome.
Hey, listen, man, if you're starting with Devontae and you add a guy in Jacoby Myers, you're doing okay.
You're doing all right.
Anyways, okay, we're running a little bit long, but that's okay. We had a lot of ground to cover, especially when you add the Aaron Rodgers drama into the mix, into that rundown as well. But anyways, new website has been relaunched, receptionperception.com. Go check it out. And I promise you, you guys, if you have seen the old site and then you see the new site, I think you'll be impressed. And of course there are some little details that we're still hammering out. Some of the site's still under construction, but that's okay. Anyways, as we sit here today, March 15th, man, what an exciting time it is. Free agency has officially begun. The website has relaunched, and I tell you what, man, we appreciate everyone following along. So, go to the website, receptionperception.com. Go check us out. Free DJ Moore sample on the site right now. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Goh. We'll see you.